From Washington, VOA presents Issues in the News.
Hello and welcome to Issues in the News. I'm Kim Lewis, and joining me on the panel this week are Cindy Sain, VOA diplomatic correspondent, and Chris Simpkins, VOA senior TV correspondent. Welcome, Cindy and Chris.
Thank you.
Good to be with you, Kim.
Well, here are the issues. President Joe Biden, in his first trip overseas as president, announced a historic COVID-19 vaccine donation. Half a billion Pfizer vaccines will go to the lowest income countries. Biden also met with leaders of the G7 group of industrialized nations in Cornwall, Britain, for the group's three-day annual summit. Biden will continue his European trip with a NATO summit, followed by a meeting with EU leaders. He is slated to meet with his Russian counterpart, Vladimir Putin, on June 16. In her first international trip as vice president, Kamala Harris highlighted Biden administration's priorities for the United States and the Central American region. Meeting with Guatemalan and Mexican presidents, Harris signed accords addressing security threats such as transnational crime and drug trafficking and finding common strategies to address the root causes of migration. Two U.S. Senate committees issued a bipartisan report detailing a number of intelligence and security failures ahead of and during the January 6 attack on the U.S. Capitol. Democratic Senator Joe Manchin announced he will not support a sweeping package of voting rights reforms and repeated his vow to vote to protect a Senate rule called the filibuster that allows a minority of the body to prevent pieces of legislation from receiving an up or down vote on the Senate floor. Well, those are the issues, and let's get started. Well, Cindy, let's start with Biden's announcement on vaccine donations. How significant is this?
Well, Kim, I think it's very significant. And President Biden, this is his first trip abroad as president, and he chose to go to Europe. And he's making a big point that the United States and democracies in Europe can get things done to help their citizens better than authoritarian countries like Russia and China. And now that the U.S., after a very rough start with COVID, has had a lot of success with its own domestic vaccination program, President Biden has announced this 500 million doses to go to 92 low and lower middle income countries and the African Union. And this comes after a lot of criticism saying that the U.S., you know, should be doing more, that it was basically a vaccine hoarder. So I think that this will be well received. And this also may put pressure on other countries to share their vaccines.
Also, Chris, President Biden said, in his words, the trip is aimed at making clear to Putin and to China that Europe and the United States are tight. Given this, what does he hope to accomplish with this trip?
Well, I think what he needs to accomplish is reset our foreign policy, gather up support among our allies, especially Britain, Germany, France. And after the Trump administration, we had difficulty with our allies. And former President Trump made no bones about saying things that upset our allies and our America First policy. So I think Biden wants to set a new course, and especially his meeting with Boris Johnson, where he re-pledged strong U.S. support with Britain to work together to not only settle the pressing crisis of the coronavirus pandemic, but climate change issues, as well as security issues. So he wants a strong footing among his allies as he goes into the meeting with Vladimir Putin, just to suggest to Putin that we are rebuilding our alliances in Europe and that we will be united against some of the things that the Biden administration has warned Russia about. And I think those are going to be important agenda items for Mr. Biden on his trip.
You brought up some really good points, Chris, in speaking on national security. Biden has said this is a big topic that he is going to continue to promote. And I'm sure this issue will be raised when he meets with President Putin in Geneva also. So, Cindy, what can we expect from these talks, as Chris had pointed out?
Yes. Well, as Chris rightly said, Biden will closely coordinate with allies and then a building up to this meeting in Geneva with Putin. And Biden has already said that he will bring up human rights issues with Putin, that the way that Putin has been cracking down on dissent. We have the opposition leader, Alexei Navalny, in prison. And whenever there are protests to support him, there's been brutal crackdowns by police on that. And Biden has promised to address that, as well as some major cyber attacks against U.S. facilities coming from Russian soil and some other things. And so observers are saying Biden wants to show Putin there's a new sheriff in town after former President Trump was very, very reticent to criticize Putin and even refusing to blame him for interference in the 2016 election. And we'll have to see what exactly comes from Putin and how he will negotiate things.
And I might say, Kim, tensions are kind of high between the United States and Russia because we have other issues to deal with Russia about. And one of the big ones is interference in the U.S. election, not only the last U.S. election, but the one before that. There's the contentious issue of the border military buildup on the Ukrainian border. And I think Biden will be strong about Putin saying that the defense of Ukraine is in the vital interests of the United States. And he's going to question him about why he has those troops there. And I'm sure he will ask Mr. Putin about withdrawing some of those troops and easing tensions along the border with Ukraine. Then you have these provocative military flybys that the Russians have been doing next to U.S. military aircraft. And it's concerning because the Pentagon says these are provocative actions being taken by Russian fighter jets against U.S. patrols in various areas. So I think we don't want a military conflict. And then there's the question of Russia has said they will pull out of the International Space Station. And American astronauts have been launching from Russian territories. And now that seems to be in jeopardy. So we need to find some ways to cooperate. But Biden also sending a stern message on security issues.
Yeah, those are some really big topics that we hope that they will get to. And also coming up will be the NATO summit. And Cindy, what message does Biden want to give to NATO, such as expanding it, rebuilding alliances? What do you think his message is going to be?
That's right, Kim. I think he will say that the U.S. is back. Biden is a traditionalist in the sense of really supporting the transatlantic alliance and wanting it to be rock solid and committing to Article 5 that if any member of NATO is attacked, that the others will come to the defense. And these were all things that former President Trump was very reluctant to do. And we may have some of the same messages coming from Biden about all the NATO countries need to fulfill their pledges to get to that 2% of military spending. But I think the message will be delivered in a much more tactful way and emphasizing how important it is to the United States. And a lot of these leaders are breathing a sigh of relief because Biden was a senator for decades and was always a big fan of the transatlantic alliance. And most of these leaders know him. He's a known quantity to them.
Yes, and we will continue to follow President Biden on his first European trip as president. Well, in her first international trip as vice president, Kamala Harris visited Guatemala and Mexico. I guess I'll throw this out to both of you, Cindy and Chris. Harris and Mexican President Andrés Manuel López Obrador said it was in the interest of both countries to address the root causes of migration. So far, about 178,000 undocumented migrants arrived at the U.S. southern border this past April. This is the highest total in more than two decades. With this crisis at the border, many observers and politicians from both sides wondered, would it not be in the best interest to go to where the crisis is? But the vice president did not go to the border on this trip. Your comments on this?
Well, I think that the trip viewed by the White House of Vice President Harris has been that it was successful, that this is a first step towards working out new policies that will stem the migration of people coming to the border with Mexico, and the focus on asserting control over the borders, even if it means turning some people away. But you start there, and I think the Republicans make the issue about whether or not Vice President Harris should be visiting the Mexican border to assess what's going on there. The administration said, well, let's go to the place where they are coming from, these Central American countries, and essentially telling them not to come to the United States. It's a dangerous journey, especially now as we approach the summer months where temperatures are going to be topping above 40 degrees Celsius, and you will see people die. And I think that's something that the administration does not want to see, people making this trip, and we have larger cases of death. But I think the overall arching policy change is that we are not going to turn away unaccompanied minors, that we will allow them in. Former President Trump and his administration issued a policy saying we're going to turn these unaccompanied minors back away from the United States and keep them in Mexico. So I think it's an overall reset of our immigration policy. And as you all know, it's very, very political.
And Cindy, your thoughts on Vice President Harris' trip?
I would say, well, this was her first foreign trip abroad. And one might say that President Biden got an easier foreign trip than she did. This is difficult. These are problems that have been longstanding, corruption in Central American countries and drug trafficking. And this was a very difficult assignment for Harris. And some observers are saying that the trip was rocky. You know, some progressive Democrats didn't like Harris telling migrants, do not come, saying that that was sending a wrong signal to people who are in very dangerous circumstances and might need to seek asylum. And then the trip was unfortunately a bit overshadowed by an interview that Harris gave where she was asked about why she has not gone to the border. And then she said, we have been to the border, we have been to the border. And then the interviewer said, well, you have not been to the border. And she said, well, I've also not been to Europe. And of course, Republicans and some other critics seized on this and said, you know, why is she not going to the border? As a popular figure and the first woman vice president and first woman of color, she has been a lightning rod for Republicans. So the trip was a bit rocky. It was her first foreign trip. It was a very difficult assignment. But as Chris said, on the substance of it, she promised a lot of direct U.S. aid to Mexico and Guatemala. And she also has been working very hard to get private companies in the U.S. to invest in Central America with some notable success. And she said that the Justice Department will create an anti-corruption task force and an additional task force to combat human trafficking and drug smuggling. As I said, these have been long-term problems in Central America, and she is trying to address the root causes. But the fact is that the whole thing is inextricably tied to these migrants coming to the border, and it's a tough assignment.
Yes, it is, as both of you have pointed out. Time now for a quick break, and when we come back, a bipartisan report on the January 6th attack on the U.S. Capitol cites a number of intelligence and security failures. Issues in the News is coming to you from the Voice of America in Washington. If you would like to download the program, it's free on iTunes. Just click on the iTunes tab on our website at voanews.com. While you're there, check out our other programs, Press Conference USA and Encounter. Also visit us on Facebook and leave a comment or two. Then like us at Current Affairs with Carol Castiel. Now back to our panel via Skype. Cindy Sain, VOA diplomatic correspondent, and Chris Simpkins, VOA senior TV correspondent. Well, Chris, the Senate Homeland Security and Rules Committees launched their bipartisan investigation in February, hearing testimony and reviewing thousands of documents and even written statements from U.S. Capitol Police, and they've released their report highlighting intelligence and security failures. Were some of these failures surprising?
I don't think not very much of the 127-page report based on interviews and reviews of thousands of pages of documents and interviews with law enforcement officials pretty much spoke to the obvious that the Capitol was not prepared and law enforcement at the Capitol was not prepared for the thousands of people who stormed it on January 6th. There were intelligence failures. The Capitol Police didn't have the right equipment. They failed to adequately assess the threat of the violence that day. But if you were around here that day, you knew something was amiss. As I was walking around the mall and leading up to that day, there were many, many Trump supporters around. They were staying in hotels. They even warned the Capitol Police that there were a large surge in hotel bookings in the area, which suggested a large crowd coming there. So they pretty much outlined some of the things that we thought that had happened, and especially that there was a lack of force at the Capitol. There were not enough Capitol Police officers to protect the building.
Also, Cindy, in all of this release of information, will they really get to the bottom of who actually dropped the ball, so to speak?
Well, that's a very good question, Kim. And I think, as Chris pointed out, we know that there were policing deficiencies and that we know that there were intelligence failures. But the question that the reports did not get to at all is why? And the reports did not examine former President Trump's role in calling on his supporters to come to a rally that day on January 6th, where the U.S. election results were being certified in Congress that day. It was no accident that it happened that day when the election was being certified. And the motto of the rally was Stop the Steal, with former President Trump and other Republican senators and local legislators saying that somehow the election was stolen from Trump, which is not true. But a lot of Trump supporters believed it and came to the Capitol. That is what a lot of Democratic lawmakers are saying. This is what needs to be examined, is Trump's role in possibly inciting this and calling for people to come to Washington. And that is why Democrats are pushing for a commission. But so far, Republican Senate Minority Leader McConnell and others are blocking this and do not want to see this commission happen.
And I might add, Kim, that this first congressional report on the Capitol riot, it described it as an unprecedented attack, but it did not use the word insurrection. And the bipartisan team of senators that were a part of this committee studying and producing this report, the Republicans did not want that language contained in the report itself, that there was an insurrection at the Capitol. It is only contained in footnotes of the report and interviews in the report. And Democrats sitting on the committee said that they would not be able to issue this report without agreeing to Republicans on the committee saying that we do not want to use that word. So that's also another rallying cry by Democrats to call for another bipartisan independent committee to study this, whether it's a select committee or some other form of a bipartisan effort to look at the root causes of the Capitol riot, not just the security failures.
And looking at this report and the ongoing investigation, the Justice Department said it is pursuing those who broke the law and have so far arrested over 465 people across all 50 states. At this point, is it just the Justice Department that is pursuing those who broke the law?
Well, that's what the Republicans would like, and they point to it. Minority Leader Mitch McConnell said that the commission is not needed to study because a lot of the stuff that will come out in the prosecution of the hundreds of people that are now facing charges and investigations by the Justice Department. So you have that, and then I think there is a reluctance for Republicans to have a committee that would continue to investigate well into next year. And we have in November of 2022 midterm elections for Congress. And there's a feeling that Republicans can win back the House of Representatives in this upcoming 2022 midterm election. And they don't want to do anything that would hinder that effort to gain control of the House of Representatives and also get in the way of their messaging. And if there's a committee going on and looking at what happened and former President Donald Trump's administration's role in it, that actually might hurt the Republicans' chances to pick up some seats in the House of Representatives and gain control over the Democrats.
I want to get in our final topic of discussion. Democratic Senator Joe Manchin defended his decision to vote against a sweeping voting rights bill, and he also said he's not willing to change Senate rules to help his party push through much of President Joe Biden's agenda. So I'll just throw this out to both of you. What does this mean for both Democrats and Republicans at this point?
Well, Kim, Democrats have the slimmest of majorities in the Senate. And the problem is that it's basically they are dependent on Senator Joe Manchin from West Virginia, which is a very conservative state. It is a state that former President Trump won in big numbers. And to get anything through the Senate, Democrats really are relying on Joe Manchin. And Manchin met with civil rights leaders this week who tried hard to convince him of the need for this Voting Rights Act, this For the People Act, since Republicans in states all over the country are trying to restrict voting rights ahead of the next election. But after the meeting, Manchin said that no minds were changed, that he still opposes the sweeping election reform. And his reasoning is that he cited a lack of bipartisanship, which is going to be very difficult to get Republicans to support it because Republicans, as I said, in states all over the country are trying to reduce early voting and in some states like Georgia are even making it a penalty to give food or water to voters who are standing in long lines for hours waiting to vote. So this is a very, very contentious issue, and Joe Manchin is at the center of it.
He also urged Senate leadership to update and pass the John Lewis Voting Rights Advancement Act. This is a bill that brings back major pieces of the 1965 Voting Rights Act, including a provision that requires states to consult with the federal government before making major changes to their voting rules. So, Chris, what are the issues with the present voting laws, and why are politicians saying they need to be changed?
Well, Kim, those efforts that are going on in several states would limit voting activities. It would eliminate things such as same-day registration to vote. It would curb mail-in voting, which proved to be very successful in last November's election in dealing with the pandemic. But it's an attempt to lessen the number of voters, some critics say, who are going out to vote, and those are people of color. And then I think it's important that we look at some of the things that were taken out of the Voting Rights Act in 2013 by the Supreme Court. And one of the key components that was gutted in 2013 from the Voting Rights Act and now is attempting to be put in place with this new legislation that's being proposed is to reinstitute the ability of the Justice Department to investigate changes in voting practices in these states that have a previous history, and I'm talking about in the 50s and 60s, that put in place rules to prevent blacks from voting. So these are the type of things that Democrats want to have back in place, safeguards to prevent states from denying people's ability to vote and making it easier to vote instead of harder.
And with just a few moments left, I just wanted to bring up really quickly that President Biden cut off this week negotiations for a bipartisan deal on infrastructure with a group of six Senate Republicans. Why did he cut off negotiations, and what is his next step on getting his infrastructure package passed?
Kim, I think President Biden realized that they are off on the numbers. The Republicans are requesting far less money than President Biden wants to commit. I think President Biden is realizing he wants to stick with the amount that he wants to put into infrastructure. And so he said, let me stop negotiating with this. And a lot of Democrats have been urging him, especially progressive Democrats, have been urging him to just forget about trying to go at this at a bipartisan level, and that the Republicans will never agree to what the Biden administration wants or even come close to agreeing to some of the things that they've outlined. So in order to get this infrastructure deal through, it may have to just rely on Democrats.
And we will have to end on that note. I want to thank our panelists, Cindy Sain, VOA diplomatic correspondent, and Chris Simpkins, VOA senior TV correspondent. I'm Kim Lewis, and thanks for joining us for Issues in the News.